Can I take you down memory lane with me for a moment? I got a call from Dr. W.T. Holmes, a pastor who just retired, about 2 years ago, and he said, "Kevin, there's a meeting of pastors over at the Findlay building. I'd love for you to show up. Can you make it?" I said, "Yes, sir. I'll do what I can to be there." Well, I got there, and what I did not realize, what he failed to tell me, is that all the pastors there were going to look at a group of about 10 homes that were part of a Renaissance grant, and each pastor was going to take a house and remodel that house. I left there with a house. The only problem is no one from the church knew that I had a house. So I'm leaving the parking lot going, "What have I gotten myself into?" But you guys being the kind of folks that you are, you bail me out of so many situations that you were willing to jump in, and we fixed the house on Oak Street. But we were walking around doing a tour, and I made the mistake of pulling a piece of metal off of one of the houses to look under the foundation, and there was a 4x4. Thankfully, it was treated. But it was a 4x4, and it was holding up the corner of the house. And the house was really just dangerous. It's falling to pieces. And the grant provided for roof and paint and windows. It didn't provide for foundation work. And so I looked at some of the pastors that had been doing some of this stuff before, and I said, "What do we do about that?" And they looked at me and they said, "You're going to put the metal back because we can't handle it. We can't fix everything." And it troubled me. I'm like, "Man, surely there's something to do." So I start, anytime something is wrong, my tendency is to say, "God, you have all the solutions. And how do we solve this?" And so I just started thinking, dreaming, and I was watching television and how they were building these smaller houses on television. I said, "That'd be perfect for our community." Because a lot of these folks are single, they're retired, they're disabled, and they don't need a big house. And occasionally when I think I've got a good idea, I'll start dreaming out loud in front of people just to see their reaction, see if it sounds smart to them too. So I started dreaming out loud one day, and I was dreaming out loud in front of Jeff, and Jeff said, "You know, at Tech," that's where Jeff works, he said, "at Tech they have this construction department." And he said, "I'll talk to the director there," who's Ed Moore. I'm going to introduce him and Steve in just a minute. He said, I'll talk to them. He said, they build things to train the students in the construction trades. He said, they may be interested in doing a house like that if they knew it could be paid for. So I met Ed and Steve first time, and we just started talking. I love these guys because they're just get-it-done people. You know, there are some people you run into, and it's like, you can't do that. It doesn't matter what you say. You can't do that. But these are the kind of guys that are like, "Oh, yeah, we can do it. We just have to figure out how to do it." And so they took me around the facilities and showed me, and we kind of had this loose plan of how if Ember would pay for the material that York Tech would use their students, and their students would get firsthand experience on how to build in a real house. It's different looking at a plan or building something from a model than building an entire house, seeing that thing from the ground up. And so this literally was one of those win-win situations. We would provide all the material, so we covered the expense. They provided the labor, which saved us money. So we went away saying that Ed was going to talk to the folks higher up and see if we could get approval for that. I was going to continue to dream out loud in front of people in Chester. And so 2 years ago, there was a forum held at the Memorial Building. It was the county supervisor, Shane Stewart, City Councilwoman Angela Douglas, and I believe City Councilman Carlos Williams. And after the event, I walked up to Angela Douglas, who I had never met before, and I introduced myself. I tossed that idea out, and she has been such an incredible resource. She knows so many different places and people, and she put us in contact with all the right folks. And so honestly, this housing thing could not have been done without her help. She let us know that there was a homeowner repair program. We didn't even know about that. And so she told us about that program. And so we're thinking, okay, this thing might actually work. This is doable. And so we had the house. We thought we needed a board. And so Dr. W.T. Holmes, he kind of pops in and out of this story. One day I was at a Findlay board meeting with him, and he said, "Just curious," he said, "do you need anybody that does finances as part of your new I-58 thing?" I said, Dr. Holmes, Chris Getty and I have been praying about that for the last 2 weeks. We said we needed somebody who could do financial training as part of what we're doing with I-58. If you know Dr. Holmes in any way, he grabs his phone, he starts calling, he hands me the phone, he says, talk to Eloise. I'm like, who's Eloise? I'm like, hi, Eloise. I'm not really sure why you and I are talking other than you might know something about finances. Eloise is now working with Leslie Brakefield, who I'll introduce in a minute. And every month they've been doing financial training. And I will tell you, if you want to get your finances in order, that drill sergeant right there, and I am not overstating that, will get you in line if you will but listen to what she has to say. And this board started coming together. Jeffrey Commodore, I see you over there. Jeffrey, stand up, please. Jeffrey lives in the community. We met him at when we were introducing the house and said, clearly this man loves the community and knows people in the community. And we asked him if he'd serve, and he did. And now if we ever need any person who lives on any house in that neighborhood, Jeffrey knows them. He knows the mama, the grandma, their first cousin. He knows them all. We just put Jeffrey on and he tracks them down for us. Vicki Fletcher, some of you may know from the hospital, she joined the board. Baron Hicklin came on middle ways through, one of the best secretaries I've ever seen. His notes are spotless, and Lord knows we need them. And this guy down front, who he and I always have a love-hate relationship, don't we? Chris Getty, he needs no introduction. No, he's right here on the front. You got to have people in your life that'll tell you the truth, right? Especially when you're in leadership, you can unfortunately surround yourself with people that only tell you what you want to hear. And I appreciate the fact, and I love you, my brother, that this never bothered you to tell me what I want to hear. So we've got a house, we think. We've got a board, we know, but we need land. So we talked to County Supervisor Shane Stewart and Auditor Donnie Wade, and we found out that a lot of the land in East Chester had been taken over the years through forfeited land, meaning if someone couldn't pay taxes, it'll eventually go back to the county. And so they were holding a fair amount of land in the neighborhood. And so they gave us a piece of property. They gave us a lot. And so we're like, yes, okay, now we have a piece of property. And then one day, Baron Hicklin was driving through the neighborhood, and he said, Kevin, there are auction signs throughout the neighborhood. And it turned out that the county was going to sell off all of the forfeited land throughout all of the county. And there was a lot of land over there. And so if you know anything about our church, we believe the gifts are still very much alive and active. And a lady here, Pat Burig, she came up to me and she said, Kevin, I've got this word, Jubilee. You know, if that word means anything to you, in scriptural times, they were instructed to have a year of Jubilee. It was a year when debts would be canceled, land would be returned, and she said, I got this word that there's a Jubilee coming. I said, that's fantastic, Pat. I don't know what to do with that word. I was thinking of what could that apply to? And I couldn't think of anything. And so when that happens, you just kind of set that word there and you just let God move. And so when we started trying to find land to put houses on, we realized that much of this land was tied up, and that the way to free the land was for somebody to hold it and clear the title on it, or hold it until it cleared. And when I heard hold it until it cleared, I said, Jubilee. That's what we're supposed to do. We're supposed to buy the land that's for sale in that neighborhood, hold it, try to set it free, or hold it until it clears itself and then give it back to the neighborhood. That'll be Jubilee. That'll return the land. Yeah. So we got together on that day. We had about four people in the room as the auction was going. We'd never done it before. And we bid on those properties. And honestly, it cost us more in closing fees than it did to buy them. We bought a few properties for about $150, $200. And all the property in Orange is the property that we bought. So we bought seven. We had one and we bought seven more. So we bought eight pieces of property that was going to be tied up for a really long time. And we said, well, we'll buy it and we'll set it free and give it back to the community. So all the while, we've started construction on this house, and so Ed and Steve are moving right along, and I want to tell you this story because it shares some of the heart of what we're up to. We had already discussed that we wanted to do the very best job we could possibly do on this house. Because you know, when God gives a gift, He gives good gifts, right? He doesn't give junk. And so we had that understanding, and Ed sent me to one of the suppliers. And I told him what we were doing. I said, we're building a house for low and moderate income people, and I need to look at some samples. And he took me over, and he said, well, here's some of the cheapest stuff we got right here. And I thought, oh, this is a good moment. And I said, I appreciate that. I said, if I was building my own house, I'd probably look at some of that. I said, but we're gonna, in a sense, give this house away. I said, and because we represent Christ, I said, we have to give a good gift. I said, rather than give me the cheap stuff, I said, take me to the most expensive stuff you got. I said, we want the best in this product that you have. And he looked at me kind of funny. And I said, you know, that's the kind of thing that has to happen with believers. We have to give good gifts, right? That's been the model throughout. We had an opportunity to put, if you know, bat insulation, we had that. And Ed, he said, you know what? We could probably get this thing sprayed and it'd be a lot better. And he said, it'd be more energy efficient. Let me do some talking. And so Ed was able to talk a distributor into spraying the house for less than what we could have bought bat insulation for. So it has sprayed in insulation. So now I got to take you for just a moment and tell you how God will kind of swing things around a little bit. So I'm sitting in my office one Friday night for a Celebrate Recovery meeting, and a guy visited us. He was with a friend, and his name was Scott Wheeler. And Scott was looking at a picture of the house, and we're doing Celebrate Recovery, but he raises up and he says, this is really off topic. He said, but there are some people in Columbia called Harvest Call. And he said, they have run out of work to do in Columbia. He said, they're looking for something to do to finish up this last month. Do you know of any place they could go in Chester and work on some homes? And I said, as a matter of fact, I do. I said, Councilman Williams has told us about a house. There's a lady there that the house is just about to fall in. And it's in terrible shape. And I said, I'd love to see if she still needs a place. I called up Councilman Williams. He said, yes, same situation. If they'll come, let's come. We met over there. We pulled into the yard. If any of you were here that Sunday, Miss Martha May was here. She said she wouldn't let anybody in her house because she didn't want the possums or the raccoons to greet somebody at the door. You know, it just, the house was open to animals, and she had been living in that. And I honestly thought that Harvest Call was going to walk away. And they ended up last year building Miss Martha May a house. And then Councilman Williams called them again this year, and they came back and they just finished building 7 houses, and they repaired somewhere north of 25 houses, I think. And it's amazing to see when you begin to start something how God begins to just move in ways you couldn't even imagine. We thought we were going to build a house a year, and we said, that'll be good. And now 2 years later, there's been 8. This house today makes 9 houses in 2 years in little old Chester, South Carolina. So Scott Wheeler and Scott Houston came in one morning to my office, and they sat down and they said, you know, we're retired and we're looking for some things to do. We'd like to donate about 5 days a week to just working for I-58. Whatever you need us to do, you just tell us where to go and we'll work. And so Scott Wheeler and Scott Houston are the ones that built the porch when you go over, and have worked on different things for the house. They're part of Chester Freedom Ministries and been working over there. Along the way, Springs Foundation came in and funded half of the construction for house number 2. So for some of you may not realize, Ed and Steve are already working on house number 2. So it's already off the ground and going, and the Springs Foundation funded half of the cost for that. And so one day, Chris and I were talking to some folks over in the community. It was a homeowners association. And the question finally came up. I wondered. I knew it was coming. But I didn't know who was going to ask it. And I didn't know if anyone would have the courage to ask it in front of us. But we ran into the person that had the courage, and she did it. And she looked us square in the face after we shared about the housing and all the things that we wanted to do. And she said, I think all that's fantastic. She said, I hope you're successful. She said, but I got one question for you. And she leaned in. She said, what's in it for you? What's in it for you? That was a great question. Now, I was glad she asked it because I knew it was coming somewhere along the line. I just didn't know if anybody would ever ask me, and I was happy as could be that she would ask me to my face. The only problem is I hadn't prepared an answer. I was like, well, I said, because the only answer I have is that God sent us there. God told us to go do it. And if there's anything, it's this excitement of believing that God is still true to His Word. That God is still God. And if you trust Him for something, He'll do something. And if you trust Him for incredible things, you'll see incredible things. And I love watching God move. So my answer really was, I like watching God move, and I think He's about to move here. So I want to get a front row seat. But sometimes God will allow other people to defend you, and you don't have to defend yourself. And so Senator Mike Fannin was there that day, and Senator Mike Fannin spoke up and he said, these guys have been working over here for a few years now. He said, they've been working over at Finley. He said, they've been in the parks. He said, they've been doing stuff for a couple of years. They worked on the Renaissance grant. He said, so I really believe they just want to come and see God move in the community. And I thought to myself, what a beautiful thing. You know, that you don't have to walk around defending yourself. You know, we live in a world where, you know, we have to PR everything, protect our image, re-image ourselves. And it reminds me that just let God be your PR department. And time is a great indicator of all things, right? So if there's anything squirrely going on, just give it time. You'll find out if there's anything up with us. You'll figure it out. Time will tell. And so I need to share a few other things that I think are absolutely important. The city council has been absolutely amazing. Everything that we've needed in terms of their help and support, they've been so generous. So I want to thank the city council for what they've done. Bob Scroggs, he's out preaching today at another place. He's been the contractor for the job. And then Leslie Brakefield is in the back. Leslie, if you'll stand up. Leslie is now the real brains and glue and everything else to this project, right? One quick story. Bob and Leslie literally changed seats in the middle of this project. They realized that they needed to swap positions, and they did that. And you would never see that anywhere. But because these folks love the Lord, they realized this person is better at this and this person is better at that. And they literally switched seats. And it was one of the most beautiful and humbling things I have ever seen. Miss Angela Douglas just walked in. Darling, will you please stand up? That's City Councilwoman Angela Douglas. I already told them we wouldn't be here today had it not been for all of your resources and wisdom and help that you've given us. So we're grateful, dear. And so now Leslie is the one who continues this project, and Leslie's got a board with about 40 people that are ready for their houses to be worked on, and people who are in the pipeline to want to receive houses that are coming. We don't have a person that's qualified for this house, but we have some folks that are working. They're getting their credit in line, and that's what we wanted anyway, was a pool and a pipeline that we could move people toward home ownership. And so Leslie is doing that. And then you guys here at Ember, man, you guys will let us do some crazy stuff. You know, I'll bring up some crazy stuff and you guys are like, yeah, we can charge that mountain. We can take that mountain. And so for all of you guys here at Ember, I want to thank you for your radical generosity. It was one of the things when we built Ember that we wanted to build it on was being radically generous. And you guys have done that. For some of you who are visiting, quite often I forget to take the offering. And no pastor ever forgets to take the offering. And I honestly will forget, but you guys are just so faithful that you bought into what we're doing here that it absolutely amazes me. So for your generosity, I thank you for the way you guys have been over at the house working. I can't name all of you that have been over cutting trees and cleaning up and working on things. I just thank you so much for using your time and your talents. And so the reason I went through that whole story the way that I did is because, one, I think it's important that we realize that things take time, right? This is a two-year endeavor. So when you're doing things, I think the more important the thing you're trying to do, sometimes the longer it takes to do it. Raising kids takes forever. You never stop almost, do you? Everything that's important takes time, and this is taking time. And it takes relationships. If you noticed, we don't have these fancy drawn-up contracts on everything. We have relationships. Because those are actually stronger. You see, the reason we have to have airtight contracts today is because our relationships are so doggone faulty. But what we've done, I think, through this is proven that if people will work together, it's amazing what can get accomplished. If people will just chip in their piece. I think about Jeff so many times, and I think, what would have happened if Jeff had sat there in that truck that day and never had a conversation with the guys at York Tech? And some of us think, man, I can't do anything for God until I do something extraordinary. Sometimes you need to put somebody in contact with somebody. Don't underestimate what God is doing. Just be faithful. Just be faithful in whatever it is that God is telling you to do. And so relationships are important. I mentioned radical generosity and serving and loving well and being an asset-driven approach. Does anybody know what that means? Have you ever heard of that asset-driven? A lot of times we run around and we try to look for the problems, right? And we've gotten quite good at that, haven't we, as a society? We can point out all the problems. But being asset-driven means this. You go into a situation and you look where God has already been. Because I assure you, He's already been there. And assets say, let's look at what God has done, what God is doing, and let's build on the good things that are there. And so when we looked at East Chester, we didn't see a problem. Don't anybody mistake that. We didn't see a problem. When we walked through that neighborhood, you know what we saw? S.L. Finley, a place of history, a place of a tumultuous time of racial reconciliation, a place where I went to junior high, an asset to the community. We looked at Brainerd. Man, the history of that is phenomenal. If you don't know it, you ought to check into it. Absolutely incredible. The brilliant minds that were produced out of Brainerd. We saw many parks there. I think there's two or three parks in the neighborhood. We saw land that was available. We saw people that still sat out on their porches and talked to one another. Now, isn't that amazing? Because, you know, nowadays we build the porch on the back. Right? So you can even ignore the doorbell. These folks, this community, they just sit on the porch and they talk and they're friendly. They walk up and they just talk to you. And so it's an asset-driven approach. And one last thing, because you know a preacher's got to tie something back to Scripture, right? I-58. What is I-58? It comes from Isaiah 58. When I started college, my college advisor, he looked at me and he said, Kevin Taylor, what do you want to do in life? And I looked at him I guess I was 18, I don't know. I looked at him and I looked him in the eyes. And I said, Dr. Broach, I want to change the world. I still want to change the world. I don't want to save it because Jesus has already done that. But I do still want to change the world. I do still think it's possible for believers to get together, change the world. Many people look around and say the world is in a desperate place. A lot of things going on. That's because you watch too much of the news and TV. But I will tell you that God is in control. I will tell you that God is going to win. That God's church is going to be spotless and victorious. And the strategy for winning, for changing the world, is in Isaiah 58. And I don't know why more people don't know that it's there and more people wouldn't follow it. I'll tell you this, Isaiah 58 is the strategy for changing the world. It's the strategy for changing the place where you work. It is the strategy for changing the school that you attend. It's the strategy for changing the family that you were born into. It's brilliant. And so I want to end with just introducing you to the strategy that God laid out. I'm going to contextualize it a little bit. I hope you'll allow me to do that. But essentially, God tells the prophet to speak as loudly as he can and tell the people this. in verses 2 and 3, that they were busy, busy, busy in worship. They loved studying all about God. And they appeared to be a right living, law-abiding, and God-honoring people. And I said, you know what? That's true today. We are busy, busy, busy in worship sometimes, aren't we? And we are busy, busy, busy studying more and more about God. I sometimes think that people are addicted to knowledge. And they were right living, law-abiding, God-honoring people. There was just one problem. They said, God, it seems like you don't hear us. It seems like you're distant and removed from us. And why are things the way that they are? And I said, oh, dear God, that is the condition of the church. We love that little chill that runs down your back during worship, don't we? Now, don't get me wrong. I love it, too. And we love learning more about God. We'll sit under teaching and we'll listen to all kind of teaching. And yet we look at the news and we look at the world and we say, something's going wrong in the world today. And it says they prayed. Now here's where I really begin to contextualize this thing. So our teachers, you got to give me some latitude here, okay? It says they prayed. Oh, they prayed at the courthouse. They prayed at the pole, the flagpole at school. They came down as a church and prayed at the altar. They gathered up with each other and they prayed from one church to the next. They gathered around and fasted and prayed. And God said, since you aren't asking the right questions, let me tell you the kind of fast that I desire. And then God begins to tell them in verses 6 on through 10. He said, this is the fast that I desire. I want you to break the chains of injustice. You see, there are some people that say that's this new thing that churches are getting into. I'd say, no, it's an old thing that we lost. In Scripture, if you see the word righteousness, you're also seeing the word justice. They were the exact same thing in Scripture. If you want to say that you have righteous, show me your justice. Show me that you're breaking the chains of injustice. Show me that you're doing something about the racial reconciliation. Tell me that you're doing something for the poor. And that's what he says. He says, stop using people. Begin to free the oppressed. Cancel their debts. Share your food. Share your house. Share your clothes. Do something for your family. Stop blaming people. Stop ignoring the issues. Stop disconnecting yourself from the problem. But see, we love to say that that person's poor because they're an alcoholic, because they just won't get a job. But Isaiah 58 says, quit putting people in boxes and separating yourself from the problem so you don't have to do anything. But associate yourself with the poor and the downcast and the downtrodden. Stop making stuff us and them. We love to put people in places where we don't have to do anything. We don't have to look that way. We don't have to drive down that neighborhood because we don't want to see it and be bothered by it. God said, you want a fast that I desire? Bother with it. And then these promises come. It's all the things we want. It's all the things we pray for at the flagpole and at the courthouse and at the altar and in our joint unity services. Listen to what he promises. It's in verses 8 and then again repeated in verses 10. He said, your light will break out like the dawn, rising from the darkness. Jeffrey told me one day, he said, Kevin, they're talking about it at the barbershop. And they're talking about it at T&M. And they're having hope. Because the light is shining. When you take care of the poor and the downcast and the broken, the people that need God. He said, your recovery will speedily spring forth. We thought we were going to build a house a year. God said, no, I just need you to get something started. I got some people in Illinois going to come down and going to build four times the houses y'all going to build. And you'll have 9 in a year. You watch how fast I can move if you just get up off your can and do something. It says, I'll be your Shekinah light. You remember that? That cloud, that light that went before them, that cloud that was their rear guard. That's what the imagery is there. He says, you call to me and I will say, here am I. What do you need? What do you need me to do? He says that the gloom will become like midday. I live by a little lake, a little pond, and in the mornings a fog will be there. But you just let the sun begin to rise up, and it'll begin to burn the fog off. If you begin to do what it says right here, you watch the fog be lifted over a community, over a city, because the light will burn it off. He says, I'll satisfy you in scorched places. That means you'll be full even if you're living in places where everybody's empty. That's a good word. Because some of us complain about going into bad and empty and dark and scorched places. But the promise of God is this: don't you worry about that. I'll feed you. I'll water you. You'll be a well-watered garden. And then, these last ones, I will rebuild the ancient ruins. God's already been in this community. He just wants somebody who will rebuild the ancient ruins. He said, I'll raise up the age-old foundations. He said, you'll be called the repairers of the breach. Wouldn't that be novel that people looked at the church and said, if you got a problem, run down to one of those churches in Chester because they got a solution. They can fix it. Their God can do it. And you'll be the restorer of the streets in which you dwell. That promise satisfies my soul. Every time I drive through that neighborhood, I don't know what you see, but I know what I see. I see restoration happening. And in Isaiah 58, you see the beautiful heart of God. And you see a strategy for changing every place.